Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, it might be close to Christmas, but Edwin is still with me. Hi, Edwin. How are you doing?
I'm still around, Martin. Still around. I haven't been taken out by the doc or anybody else. I know I've got a few targets on my back, especially now that I've really gone hell for leather with the with that site that we launched. So we'll see what happens next year. But I think it was timely because now the mainstream are talking about rental crisis and so forth, and you and I have been saying that things aren't going to get better for another 3 years, but can things slow down a little bit at least till we get to Christmas and celebrate New Year's? Things are just seem to be getting speeding up and getting worse by the week, Martin.
Certainly, plenty of craziness going on at the moment. I was talking to someone in the UK earlier on today. They've still got -5 and -6 over there, which is horribly cold, and so the electricity prices have now gone through the roof. So wherever you look, there's chaos.
Oh, look, there's chaos and there's all sorts of shenanigans going on. I mean, some people are calling for Australia to buy the $28 billion stealth bombers, thinking that one bomber or five are going to get us out of trouble with China. But all sorts of things going on. And then you've got with regards to energy. And now you've got the Albo and his team saying that they're going to reduce their energy. Our energy costs by 230 next year. Can we have the first 225 reduction that we were promised this year before we go into the 230 reduction for next year, please?
Well, there was this article, right? Former Labor Minister Graham Richardson says the federal government has to do its very best to put downward pressure on energy prices. Well, so far, you're right. I haven't seen much evidence of any improvement. In fact, it's going the other way. And I had a quick look at my energy bill the other day. It's gone up and up and up and up and up. And, okay, I mean, I use a bit because I've got the studio and things here. But, you know, ordinary households, they're just being forced to pay more and more. And as you say, it'd be nice to see a bit of relief. All the talking is good, but actually it doesn't make much difference, does it?
No, it doesn't. The thing is, it's – look, and off late, which one of the other government initiatives that we're going to talk about, albeit good – it's still, nevertheless, it's government control of the private sector with regards to energy. I don't understand a great deal of it, but what I am sort of understanding, or my minimal understanding of it is that at the end of the day, the taxpayers are going to be subsidising the so-called reductions and the so-called proposals that the government's planning to do with the gas companies and everybody else. So at the end of the day, we pay for it one way or another. In prices, albeit that they may stay stable for a little bit, but nevertheless they're still not growing as fast as what they should be growing in the free market. But I mean, this whole world is just it's just gone bonkers, Martin. I mean, now look, everybody wants to. Is there any reason why every other nation wants to join BRICS? And so does Victoria. Dusty tells me these things. I know Turkey wants to join BRICS, but I don't know about Dusty's story of Victoria wanting to join BRICS.
Yeah, well, there are some crazy things going on. For example, there's rumours that the US might buy oil using gold from Russia at the equivalent of the current price of gold. And in fact, maybe even that will put upward pressure on the price of gold and therefore increase the value of the gold that Russia has whilst the US tries to top up its strategic reserves. I mean, you know, you couldn't make this stuff up really, could you?
Nah, look, I mean, I think, look, the Biden administration should contact our mate John Adams. And see if it can get a hold of some silver. Maybe, I don't know. I'm just shooting the breeze here, Martin.
Exactly. And you know, the $28 billion for those stealth bombers, right? We could take a bit of that and chuck it into the energy system and bring our prices down. That would be much, much better use of that money, I'd have thought.
Look, definitely. Look, it's just one of those things. But the interesting thing is all these so-called government initiatives and government policies that are coming on with regards to energy. Later on, we're going to be talking, touch on a little bit about the social credit scores that they also want to implement to protect us from ourselves, and also the with regards to the New South Wales tenancy regulations that are going to be brought out on the 17th, around the rental bidding and so forth. We'll touch on that as well. So it's really government wanting to. As I said, some of it, has good intentions, but there's something somebody said about government and good intentions don't necessarily get you to.
From the government. I'm here to help you.
Trust me, I'm a real estate. I'm a politician that moonlights as a real estate agent. Isn't that Albo and their treasurer? This is what they are.
Well, you did raise the question the other week, right, about how many politicians have investment properties. And, it's hard to get the full data, but my suspicion and your suspicion is they probably have a larger number of investment properties than the average Australian.
I think between them they could they put a lot of those property companies to shame. I reckon they'll probably put Triggerboff to shame as well. At the end of it, at the end of the Martin, it's dusty when we have a little chat of the evenings. At the end of it, comes back to what are we doing for ourselves? We can't control the global economy. We can't control global politics. We can't control the geopolitical landscape. We can't control what these politicians are doing. To an extent, we can have a voice. We can we can raise a voice. We can collectively we can say something. Have a go. But at the end of the day, it's really what comes back to what we're doing ourselves within our own confines and our own households. And that's what we've been trying to encourage the people to do and make the decision based around the needs of the individual buyers or the needs of the individual renters before they go out and make those million-dollar decisions or relocate to different areas and different suburbs. So I hope that people understand where our heart is and where what we're trying to tell them and show to them, not telling them to buy and not telling them to sell and not telling them to hold and not telling them to do anything other than just giving them broad perspective of look at the greater picture. We've got no control in the sense over the greater picture. It's what we're going to be but we can control what we're going to be doing and therefore protect ourselves and better hedge ourselves as we move forward into greater unknowns. And as I keep on saying, things have still got to get broken before they can get better.
No, I agree. And, a good example of that is the regional banking closures, which is taking on a pace. 100 now have closed since the Task Force report came out just 3 months ago. And all of the banks are just piling to the exit. So regional centres are losing branches left, right and centre. And that's another example where politicians are completely incapable, it seems to me, of doing what they should be doing, which is they should have started to intervene. And because this is serious for those regional communities. When they lose the last branch, they then don't have the facility now to be able to pay cash in, draw money out, particularly businesses paying cash in. And we're seeing stories where people are now having to travel 100, 200, 300 kilometres just to find somewhere to pay money in. It is ridiculous. And yet politicians, again, are just not up to the mark here. And this is another example where I've been lobbying quite hard with, a few other players as well to try and get this change. But for real ordinary Australians out in the regional areas, this is getting really serious now.
Look, it is. And it seems to affect the generation that aren't necessarily up to date with technology. And this is what I'm saying. There are many voices that are not being heard, even in the city areas. There are voices that aren't being heard, and it's time that we formed a collective, we formed a group to not as a political party, but as a movement in order to remind these bastards who put them there in the first place. Well, not necessarily that we put them there or we voted them, because most of them got in with a minimal amount of votes anyway. It's all this party politics and all this politicking and sharing of votes and so forth and preferences that have got them there. But we need to remind them who's really their boss. as opposed to being bossed by them, bossed around and being tossed around by them. And hence the reason why the landscape and the property sector is what it is. No matter which way you look at it, and because of decades of policy failures all around.
Yeah, well, that's right. And the problem is that politicians somehow feel that they sort of are imposing top down, you know, without necessarily perhaps the right level of consultation. The truth is that they are more, they should be enabling Australians to do the things that they want to do rather than getting in the road. At the moment, they seem to be getting in the road and frankly, probably are more aligned to the big end of town or the big property sector or whatever. So really, a lot of the decisions that we're seeing coming out of political land really are not actually necessarily in the best interest of the people. And that's a real problem.
Oh, look, it is, and then you've got the second, the other side of that sword, that pierces deep into the general public, and that is the public servants. Once they're in, that's it. They're in, and I'm talking about public servants in terms
jobs
of
for life.
Jobs for life and perks and everything for life, and it's just so top heavy from the local LGAs, which I have a major issue with, and all the way to state and federal levels as well. So look, it's ongoing, but at the end of it, we just got to do and make the decisions that we seem are going to be best suited for us moving forward. No different to what you would do for your followers and the people that seek your advice in with your with that. Overview of the areas where people want to move to, as like you were saying, from not only from a purchasing point of view, but also from understanding what the suburbs are like, and what the areas are like, even from a rental point of view, because it's going to be a lot of moving and shifting over the next 2 or 3 years as rents become out of reach in many areas. People and families are going to be moving around. Look, if there's a removalist company on the on the stock exchange, on the ASX, I think that's where I'd be putting my money, because over the next 3 years, there's going to be a lot of moving and shifting of families and relocation of family groups from one end of town to another, because it's not an easy fix. I don't see any real change, positive change or a worthwhile change that even as things get put in place now. The real effect, or the real change, or the return on this investment that the governments are trying to make is not going to be felt, not going to be seen until the end of 2025.
Yeah, well, there, wherever you look, there are some interesting questions. Look at China, for example, right? So China's now sort of pedaling back from zero COVID, but the latest is that people are still hunkering down. They don't necessarily want to come back out on the streets, right?
No, because it's the thing is, before you can get any medical care or assistance, you need to prove that you're not COVID positive. You haven't been COVID positive for 48 hours or so. It's freezing cold. People have been standing in queues to get these tests. They've run out of test kits. They've run out of all sorts of things, because as quickly as they shut down, they've done the 180 degree in opening up, but with no real policy again. The main CCP, the central government, just throwing their hands up in the air and saying, listen, it's up to the local governments. It's not us. Don't look at us. Don't blame us. Because of all the demonstrations that were happening, they threw it back at the local governments. But the local governments have said, listen, we're running out of money. Even Guangzhou, as strong as its government is, is running out of money, and they had to be forced to open up. Otherwise, they were in a world of shit with regards to keeping their employees, government officials, and so forth, and to keep things going. So with this comes the other side, which is the run out of not toilet paper, They've run out of medical supplies. They've run out of testing kits. They've run out of, and that's what one of those shops there in that notice is. They're basically telling the general public that they've run out of natural medicines, Western medicines, and all types of medicines to deal with the with the flus, colds, or symptoms of any sort in order to be to show that you're negative before you can get any other medical support or attention in the hospitals, because you can't attend a hospital unless you've proved that you've been that you're negative for 48 hours. So how do you do that without any proper medical equipment? And this is what we've been saying to our followers, Martin, is this: whatever's happening there in China, let's not think that it's not going to have an effect here. I mean, I know a lot of Western companies were starting to reinvest in China, in their Chinese stock market, because of they're saying, like, they're opening up again, you know, things are going to go back to normal. Now, things are not going to go back to normal in China, not until February, March. And the reason being is because of the cold winters, because of, it takes a long time to crank up those the machinery again in the plants. They've got to get the workers back in, if they can get workers back into the main cities, because once they go back home, that's it. You know, and there's so much, and the individual local governments are basically, it's like a, you know, that they have minor scuffles with the surrounding local governments as well. So it's a shit show right now, and which, how does that affect us? And it's basically through the supply chains, of base materials and finished products, as we've been talking about, which is going to have a continual effect. I would say till the end of February next year, post the Moon Festival, if things don't turn around again, and they decide to do some other silly buggers in China, particularly Guangzhou, which is the industrial hub of one of the biggest industrial hubs of China, which supplies Australia.
And you mentioned Moon Festival. Well, there's an implication, of course, in Australia as well, because some of the local WeChat chatters are saying that, well, people will be working through Christmas because the Moon Festival's later, right? So whilst whilst we may be off, they will be busily working.
Well, that's right. So they've, as they say, the whalos, whilst the whalos take the time off over the end of the year, the wild man takes the time off and the main shut down. Obviously, a lot of the little brothers and the little sisters aren't going to be having any work, and they need to work because they're on a cash base. They get paid on a daily basis, and it's not like they've got holidays up their sleeve or anything like that. So they'll continue to work in order to continue to support their families over in China. So they're taking, the local chatterers are saying, right, this is the time for us to take advantage of it and get things done in our homes or investment properties that we need to get done, whilst the little brothers and the little sisters and the tradespeople are available, before things get busy again, mid-January, 23, and again, then you go into the Asian festivals or the Chinese festivals as well, towards the end of February, end of January, early February, and where you get caught up in that again. So this is so they're just taking advantage of that, the local chatterers, and also keeping very close eye on supply chain issues. So therefore they're also stocking up on medication should things get really, really bad in China as well.
Absolutely. Well, moving the conversation forward, we should talk, I think, about the discussion relating to the rental sector in Australia, and specifically whether in fact people should be encouraged to bid up on rental properties. And there was an interesting article that came out that said, will the real estate institutes get behind this? This is based on New South Wales saying they want to look at whether in fact this should be outlawed.
Yeah, look, it's in the industry, when we ran the rental books for many years, it was really frowned upon to have a bidding war on rentals anyway. It wasn't kosher. It wasn't ethical. It was always considered to be wrong. But then things changed, and all of a sudden this was the new busting. Obviously, supply and demand. There's not a lot of supply. There's a huge amount of demand. So this is the next best thing in order to ramp up the prices for the landlords. And of course, there's a lot of other things behind the scenes that the general public don't know about and don't get to see, and nor do the politicians and the governing bodies. And they're all the incentives that are paid to property managers in order to bump up prices and be as minimal as possible of the properties. So, you know, in a new Twitter handle in the forum that in the movement that we created under the Australian Owners and Renters Movement, I basically put out there and tagged Victor Dominello and Don Perrottet, as well as to know that this is good. It is a good positive move towards putting a control over the industry, or a not so much a control, but put the industry on notice that the watchdogs are going to be watching over this, and in a way keep monitoring the issue around it. But also also put the question out there, but is it enough? One, and two, what they should also be really looking at is where the property managers are going to be to skirt around that, what they will be asking for or they will be leaning towards is rentals in advance, which is totally against the legislation. It's in black. The legislation is very, very clear on that a property management company cannot keep more than 2 weeks rent. You don't need to pay more than 2 weeks rent in advance. But again, there's all these buts. People will do that in order to secure tenancy. This is the desperation around rentals that we're seeing, Martin. So there's a lot of things that the government can be doing. It's a positive move, but I guess the question is from this is a question to you, Martin, from a economist point of view, is it good for a government to control a free economy like it's wanting to do? Is this is it good? Or who is it going to benefit, in the short term and the long term?
Well, it's a very important question, Edwin, and my perspective has been that the market is broken. It's been broken structurally for a long, long time. But unfortunately, all the government interventions and sort of sticking their nose in seems to me to actually make it worse, not better. And, on one hand, you've got free markets. On the other hand, you've got government control. And I'm not convinced necessarily that more government control is the right answer here. I think there's a bigger set of questions that we should be will be thinking about. What is true is there's not enough supply. Well, that's because of 20, 30, 40 years of really bad policy. The outsourcing of all rental property to the private sector, effectively. So that's the default setting. Very little focus on producing affordable accommodation, nor indeed government funded development for people who can't afford to access. And in fact, what the governments have done, of course, up to this point is trying to actually throw more incentives at people to help them buy, which doesn't solve anything anyway. And then you've got the tax breaks that actually, they sort of encourage property investment, except that at the moment, one of the core reasons we've got the issue we've got here at the moment is we've got less available properties to rent because the stock of investment property has dropped by about 20% over the last year or so because people have exited. And the reason they've exited it is because of the costs and the other structural issues that make it very difficult for them to make a return on it. So this is a big structural issue. So in a way, what I'm saying is, Edwin, just putting a finger in the dike and saying, well, we'll try and stop this thing, might sound okay from a political sense, but from a really economic structural sense, I have my doubts. And of course, interestingly, we're not alone in saying this is predominantly political, right? So the Real Estate New South Wales came out and said outlawing rental bidding will be purely politics.
Yeah, look, I listened to that to the interview with the CEO of the REI New South Wales, and look, at the end of the day, I'm not a fan of the area in New South Wales, as you know, and I am critical even with what he's saying. He's not trying to support. He's not really making a point as how this would benefit the renters, as opposed to sticking to his guns in support of the landlords. Obviously, that's who they're lobbying for anyway. I think from one side. What the government's trying to is good, because it's trying to. This is my understanding of it. I could be wrong, but this is my understanding of it, that they're trying to bring clarity and transparency. I don't believe that they're trying to control the market as much as basically say to the real estate agent, who is the professional, to be able to determine a set price on the day. And that's why you've got a property manager. That's why we hold licenses, and you should be able to determine what the price of the property is on the day. I mean, there's a lot of bullshit going on with the auctions and with the price guides around auctions and non-disclosure and, oh, we'll wait until the market dictates. That's all hogwash. If you can't give me an indicative price within 10% of the value of the sale value, well, you shouldn't be in the game anyway, right? And the same thing goes for property management. So I guess in a way, what I believe that the New South government my interpretation of it is that this will bring transparency to know whether or not you are going to participate in attending the open inspection. If you believe the property is going to be rented for $700, well, you don't want to go there and get into a bidding war thinking that you're going to be paying $700, because it takes hours of your day. It takes petrol to get there, time, and everything else around it. So it's an inconvenience, only to find out that somebody else is going to be bidding $740, $750. $780 for the property. So it's a really waste of time. If it brings transparency to the fixed price, which is what I believe that the government's trying to do, and I would hope that that's what it's really trying to do, as opposed to control the market, then we're better off moving to Victoria or China, which being the same, we could say then the government is wrong. That is my view on it, Martin, and it forces the property manager, forces the industry to give a specific price point that you're saying, yeah, I can enter there, I can go there. So be it. Advertise at 800, and therefore people can say, you know what, I'm wasting my time. I can only afford 700. What's the point of me going there and trying to apply for a property that they want 800, I am out. At least you know that beforehand, and you can go to another open house inspection elsewhere or further afield, or you can compromise a little bit and downsize a bit or whatever. But the thing, if that's what this policy is going to do, it's a great thing. But if it's trying to control the market, I understand McGibbon's point of view. It's a free economy, and why should the government stick its nose? It's a free market, but I don't believe that that's. Again, I could be wrong. I just don't. I think that that level of transparency is required anyway, whether or not that's the intention of the government. But that level of transparency is required in order to move forward.
Yeah, good point, Edwin. And we should just re-emphasize again your new web and focus on this, because what we're looking for is people to follow it on Twitter and to engage around this very, very critical issue.
Look, yes, and this is what the Twitter handle at the moment. I'm just using the Twitter handle as the forum for discussion and for people to ask any questions with regards to particularly with rentals in this case assistance. Any questions they may have, or to create a forum, a discussion forum that people can join, and as I say, create that voice that the government and government officials and elected officials and those in the private sector need to hear and need to understand that we are a force to be reckoned with on our own. We're on our own. We're just like a voice in the desert, but collectively we can be a tidal wave if we play our cards right, and if we come together as one voice in order to bring about change. Look, as I said, Martin, you and I've been saying that the structural issues have been broken for decades, and it's going to take a lot to fix. And if people think that things are going to change overnight or over the next 6 months or even 12 months, they've got rocks in their head. These things, we're not going to see any any benefit to any policy that's implemented now. We're not going to see anything come out of it till the end of 2025, as I said. And it's a long time to wait, and it's a long time before, you know, for people to find out that the level, the living standard's going to drop. They have to take kids out of schools. They're going to be relocating. They're going to be, you know, living in all sorts of dilapidated conditions, because this is what these periods and these times produce. And I've seen these cycles three times over now, even in the rental market, where then you end up with these illegal boarding houses, where you end up with this, you know, shared accommodations, where you have, you know, two or even three families taking up a rental of a large home in order to stay within the areas that they've grown up or the children have grown up in, because of the importance of the schools, medical facilities, and other other amenities that families are accustomed to, have been used to, but now they're going to be forced to move and relocate and rethink. And God forbid, we're going to potentially see a huge importation of caravans and caravan trailers from overseas, because there just won't be much, particularly as this government increases the intake of migrants. So there's going to be a lot of issues, and these issues need to be discussed and need to be voiced. And I want to put a bit more time and effort into it, and also put up videos and things, and challenge those in power to take it seriously.
Yeah, well, I think it's a very, very critical issue, and all power to your elbow. I'll certainly do all I can to spread the word. And we'll keep talking about it on here as well, all right? So people can come here or go and look at the Twitter, and we'll push this issue. This is such a critical issue, as we've said for quite some time, and it's not going to be subject to simple resolution. There's a really big structural question here that needs a lot of thought and a lot of focus. So bringing focus, I think, is a really important step. But we better move on, because there was another interesting article also that you wanted to talk about, and I think this is quite fascinating. We have a building company that's been blacklisted for good.
Yeah, blacklisted for and the builder has been blacklisted for 10 years. I mean, there's a lot of issues. There's a lot of things that are going to spin off from this, Martin. I mean, this is top place construction. I call it tip top construction. Because a loaf of bread will probably stand the test of time a lot more than a lot of these apartments that these guys have built over the years. That's why I call them tip-top construction as opposed to top place. So this is a building company with a lot of assets in terms of under construction, and the questions that need to be raised, Martin, is now that they've been banned. And the corporate license in terms of the building license, and also the builder's license that have been basically brought to naught. The question is who's going to be the builder that's got the balls to take over these projects, not knowing what's in the foundation, which is very, very critical. So historically, when I've been involved around major projects, developments that have stuck due to funding, in previous property downturn, where I was assisting the receivers in development sites and construction sites that were partly or halfway through, or even seven tenths of the way through under construction. You've got to try and find a builder that's going to take over the project, not knowing what's underneath the foundation, because the new builder takes on the whole warranty. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the first questions, if you've got some thoughts around that, Martin. But
well, I mean, the litigation liabilities that you're actually walking into are huge, right, and unknown. And that's one reason why it's quite complicated to pick up somebody else's work, particularly if they've got a bit of a track record of perhaps being a bit dodgy. And if you're a builder and you're sort of looking at all the things you could do, there's so much demand for your skills to build. Why would you go and bail out, you know, somebody else's half-finished projects? So, and yet, look at the other way. If you've actually been somebody who's signed up and is halfway through, don't expect any resolution anytime soon. These things drag on and drag on and drag on, and you end up often, you know, ending up paying a lot more than you thought initially. So there are no winners here, unfortunately.
No, they're not. And as I said, the buyers that are going to get caught up in this litigation, the buyers that have bought off the plant, because obviously the construction didn't start and the bank didn't give it the green light until at least, more than two-thirds of the project was sold off the plant.
Yep.
So all these people that are waiting, and it's multiple projects. It's not just one building.
Yep.
It's multiple buildings across Sydney. So you've got this completed under construction. There's land that obviously they haven't turned the soil yet, and so forth. So you've got close to 5,000 individual lots that are going to be affected. I'd hate to be the poor bastard that bought off the plan, not knowing when it's going to be finished, who's going to finish it, when the litigation is going to finish. Now, on top of that, finding out that the current builder that was building the project that you bought off the plan a year ago, or 18 months ago, or even 6 months ago, is going through these issues. And even if they win, what sort of things are going to be conjuring up in your mind as to the end result? I mean, there's all sorts of issues, and this is just going to be. I would say if you're involved in this, and this isn't legal advice, and this isn't financial advice, I'd drop the 5%, because I would, I think that the majority of them are only down with a 5%. I'd drop the 5% and walk, seriously.
Yeah, well, there are other examples where people have actually come off better by just walking away and losing a bit, putting it down to experience, rather than trying to fight it through the courts and through, ultimate completion and ending up with a non-satisfactory property that you then had ideally selling later. And, of course, the reputation goes with the property. So that means that even if you get a property, it probably isn't worth what you thought it was, and therefore its value into the future won't be what you thought it was. So there are so many ifs and buts and ands. Sometimes it is better just to walk and walk quick. I don't know this case, it's bound to individual preference, I guess, but it should be on the table as an option, shouldn't it?
Definitely. And I'd say, your legal would definitely find a way out. And potentially even, at the end of the day, it's the banks that are holding the bag. So who knows? Look, get legal advice and financial.
Absolutely. We're not giving financial advice nor legal advice. We're just making a general conversation. Let's move the conversation forward then, Edwin, because the numbers are quite interesting. Sydney numbers, well, this week, down 16,259.
Yeah, look, it's the seasonal change. It's come fast, but there's still confidence out there from vendors to still go to auction even as late as next week, considering all the things that happen at the end of the year. But look, Martin, if you look at the suburbs, I'll share with you later on as to the open house, a slide of the open house inspections. I wasn't able to send this one earlier today. The different open houses in different suburbs, it's a mixed bag. There are some suburbs where basically numbers have dropped by up to 40-50% in terms of numbers on sale. There are some areas where agents are still listing them. Listing new properties on market. This is what I'm saying for people that are looking in specific areas. Look at the trend. Look at your local trend. Look at those suburbs that you're specifically looking into, and that will give you a gauge and an idea of whether or not you sit back, just wait. But monitor the numbers. Monitor the new listings that come on market, because you know that they're going to be the desperate ones, the ones that have to sell. There are reasons to sell. in order for for them to basically buy something whether downsizing, whether they're moving away for whatever reason, wanting out earlier than the unknown of the first quarter of next year, which you and I have the opinion that in many areas of Sydney there's going to be a deluge of new listings, but it's going to be very pertinent or very isolated, very specific to different areas. Not every area is going to function the same. Like the mainstream paint everything with the same brush. We've got to look at myopically. We've got to look at it, holistically as well as granularly, as you say, Matt.
Yeah, well, it's very, very important to go granular and look at what's going on, because there are very, very significant dynamics in a number of different areas. But it is worth thinking, comparing last week. So we got, this is the 5th of December, 17248 was the number listed. And then on the 8th, which is typically the Thursday, it was 16892. So it started as a slide last week and the slide continues. And what's, I think, quite interesting, Edwin, that we will see a bit of a rush of new property coming on, probably directly after Christmas. Quite a lot of the property, you've got to pick the eyes out of it, because there'll be some that are actually very genuine properties that are actually, actually priced reasonably well and actually offer very good value. But there'll be also a number of other properties probably coming on where you think, you've got to be kidding, that's way above where it should be. Maybe it needs a lot of work. Maybe it's an investment property that's folded. So you got to really go granular and do the homework.
Yeah, look, this is something for our viewers, and this is something exclusive for our viewers. There was a conversation I had recently, and there was an agency that's actually looking at typically January, the launch of new properties come on the 17th, around the 17th, middle of January, for them to launch the new listings, right? Now, there's an agency in a particular area that they're talking about with a larger group, because they've got agencies all over Sydney. They're talking about doing a Boxing Day launch to get on the market early. So this is just a conversation that's just been had recently, and this is exclusive to DFA. And this is interesting how the real estate industry's mindset's changing now to bringing the New Year's listings closer, Boxing Day, New Year's Day special, as opposed to waiting the extra 2 weeks. No, it's get on the market earlier, because they can see that in specific areas of Sydney, we are going to get a deluge of property coming up.
The other point there, when a lot of people have free time just after Christmas or just after New Year, and if you look at the statistics on property portal visits, Boxing Day and New Year's Day are two of the most significantly high peaks through the entire year. So if you're actually thinking of listing, putting it on ready for those makes a lot of sense, even if you don't start showing it formally until 16th or later on in January, because you've at least kicked the ball, perhaps beating a number of other agents who won't be coming back until the middle of January.
Yeah, and the other thing is, Martin, is let's not forget that a lot of the people that are buying, they don't necessarily celebrate Christmas anyway.
That's true as well. Absolutely right. And we'll just look at the auction statistics just quickly. So as you'd expect, a little bit of sliding there as well. So if you look at Victoria, it's dropped back. If you look at New South Wales, it's dropped back at the moment. And again, you'd sort of expect that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but it's still somewhat there's still that confidence, that psychological confidence of people wanting to transact. If I come across correctly, so they haven't dropped back to 500 or four. If they drop back to 400 or something, I'd say, the holiday season's well and truly kicking in now. But it hasn't. We're still closer to 700 than we are to 600, which is still
still pretty strong, isn't it? Let's look at Melbourne. So Melbourne, this is Monday the 12th, 25194, and comparing that with the 5th of the 12th, 25,620. So just a slight fall.
Yeah, people still listening. And I think the Melbourne market's going to kick on well and truly. There's no holiday for the wicket there for sure. The agents are going to be working right through. Those numbers just don't seem to be cranking downwards. And you see that in your surveys as well from the people confidently going to market and wanting to go beyond market and so forth. It's there, the high numbers. I mean, it's almost double the Sydney numbers.
So
Melbourne is an interesting market to say the least.
Yeah, it's interesting watching property price falls because there are areas in Melbourne where prices are sliding quite significantly as well. But again, you've got to go granular. You can't just take the average for the, you know, for the whole of Melbourne or worse. Let's go to Brisbane, and there we had on the Monday the 12th, 5356, and compare it with the 5th where it was 5592. So again, a small ease.
Yeah, small ease, and again, but the transactions are still happening, like they're still being replaced as quickly as they get bought. So people are willing to transact. So there's not a lot of changes in that, other than that, Sydney's now, going to the normal seasonal, getting into that seasonal mode. But it's going to be, as we said, don't stop looking because, between now and the first week of January is when we're going to see who stays on and who else comes on, because they're the ones that are going, they're the ones that really want out. Yep. And that's where you could potentially, as a buyer, dictate terms.
It'll be interesting to see, Edwin, whether with the flood of property coming on the market, whether some of that property ultimately doesn't sell, but actually then goes back into the rental sector again. So I wonder whether we'll see a bit of a spike of available rental property when people realise that they can't actually sell at the price they expected.
Well, I don't know. Look, that is a little bit that I want to think that that there's more properties that have got pulled out of the rental market to be sold that won't necessarily go back into the rental arena because of the sheer cost and what needs to be done to a lot of these properties, because that we've been viewing a lot of properties, Martin, that are just not fit, that are just not fit for the rental arena, particularly under the new regulations.
Yep.
The new regulations are very tight when it comes to, and it's a lot of agencies, a lot of property managers are getting away with the shit that's out there because the powers to be, the governing bodies, are not really going out and doing the audits that they should be doing. But once they start auditing the property management files and going out and inspecting these homes, which are dilapidated, and that's something that I'm going to be very vocal about in getting in the ear of the politicians, Dominello and Perrottet and everybody else in between, and also the mainstream publications. I'm going to be very, very vocal as to the shit that's out there that's considered as rental accommodation that's not suited it's not fit for purpose. It's dangerous to people's health. It's dangerous to for safety, health, and all sorts of. So this is why I don't believe that there's going to be a lot of those going back to the rental arena, Martin, because the people went out because of the sheer cost of doing the rectification work to those properties.
No, good point. Absolutely good point. Well, let's move on to wackier than the conspiracy theory. And, well, this is a doozy.
Well, I don't know, Martin. I was going through social media feed, and we're going to need 100 points to get into our full pages and Twitter pages and all social media platforms according to these reporters. Now that's what the federal government are looking at. But Dusty tells me, now this is the conspiracy. It's just a conspiracy. Dusty tells me that pretty soon we're going to need 100 points ID to get into open house inspection. And $1,000, and we're going to front up with $1,000, you know, until the property is sold. And if you're not the buyer of the property, you can get the $1,000 back. That's just a theory, and it's a conspiracy. But then again, I've heard that somewhere in the mainstream media that it is actually happening. So yeah, is it a conspiracy?
No, but it is certainly, you know, interesting and significant, this digital ID thing, right? And it's the thin end of the wedge. And then if you add central bank digital currency over the top, you know, you can see how all of these things can get stitched together, and suddenly the authoritarian controlling influences and in sort of instincts of central government and maybe even state government, they'll just salivate at the idea of more control. And, you know, I keep coming back to, no, we don't want more centralized control. We don't want more government intervention. We don't want more checks, digital or any sort, right? We want open free markets, and we want individual responsibility and individual freedom.
Hold on a minute, Mark. What's that, Dusty? What? Oh, yeah. Dusty tells me they're also going to, she reckons that they're going to be wanting to see the bank account ledger to make sure that the people can afford the homes that they're going to, that they're inspecting.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. Exactly.
That's
right.
The theory.
Thank you, Dusty. Well, you know, but it just shows you the thin end of the wedge as normal. Well, I guess as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, your thoughts in terms of tip for the week?
Look, the tip of the week is just simply don't be fooled. If you're in a position where you need to make a decision on the new rental, please don't be fooled. Don't play the shenanigans and that the property management teams are asking you to play. And of course, you know, each to their own. I mean, you have your own need. It's against the regulations for a real estate agency to hold more than 2 weeks rent in the trust account, you know, in advance of rent in the trust account or ask for. But it's not really against the law for you to offer more in order to secure the tenancy. So it's really up to yourself. But what I can say around that issue, which is one of my bugbears, is when they ask for 3 months or 6 months in advance in order to secure a property, is you can ask the property manager to hold that money in their trust account and not release it to the landlord all at once. They shouldn't do it. A lot of them do it because they don't understand trust accounting, and they don't understand the regulations around that, and they'll just release it all, and then there won't be any money in the kitty should any repairs or maintenance or anything, any works need to be done or emergency works need to be done whilst you're attending this. So you can really come unstuck. The other thing is, if you are forced to look for a new tenancy, for God's sake, don't just take it, or don't just have a quick look-see. Have a really good, thorough look. Because the last thing you want to be doing over Christmas or early next year, or even a quarter of the way or halfway through next year through your fixed term lease, is having to be relocated because of mold issues or any other health or hazards around the property that you just simply overlooked because you were in too much of a rush or you felt pressured to accept. Have a thorough take a step back and have a thorough inspection. And look, reach me on the new Twitter handle, DM me photos or anything, and I'll reply to as many as I can within reason.
Yeah, thanks, Edwin. And very important there, particularly don't get bounced into moving into inferior properties with structural issues and with mold, and, you know, visible mold in particular. And do your checks. Make sure that you don't walk from the frying pan into the fire in the process. But it is very critical, if you are being forced to move with such limited supply, that sometimes people grasp the first thing that comes through the on the list or whatever, which is natural. That's human nature. But it is worth just doing a second sort of hang on a moment. Is that really the right thing to do? Just to make sure that you don't end up with a bigger problem down the track.
Yeah, especially when you're carting little ones around and you've got pets. it's a bad position. The government's really failed us, Martin. Yep. We keep on saying, but we are where we are, and unfortunately things are going to get worse and things need to be broken before they can get fixed, as we say. And but look, all we can do is trying to put help measures out there to assist our audience as much as we can. And this is, I'll do as much as I can, Sydney-based. If it's interstate, you can send me photos, DM me photos and things like that, and I can generally have a good look at and see what's going on with photos as much as I can. And I've got some of my team involved with it as well, because they're just as passionate as I am about it, and particularly when you carting little ones and pets.
Right, and just to re-emphasise, @ownersrentersmv is the new handle, right?
That's correct.
Yep, so there we go. It's up on the screen there. Edwin, thank you very much. Really appreciate your time tonight. As always, very important discussion. And we'll be doing it next week as well, won't we? So I look forward to that, and have a good week. And I guess you'll be still rushing towards Christmas at 90 miles an hour. I know I am. I'm running out of days. I've got too much to do. Typical this time of year.
Yeah, I mean, you should have filled the third 10 cubic metre or non-cubic metre skip in from, with all the books.
Yeah, no. Well, the 9-cubic metre skip is now full. It's just level full, and I'm now waiting for them to come and cart it away and give me another one. So we'll continue. See you later. Thanks.
All the best.
Bye. Cheers.